The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. I want to say thank you to Brad McDonald for filling in for me yesterday. We were able to record a couple of videos for the weeks ahead for the television program here in the UK, so that did free up a little extra time for me personally. I know Mr. McDonald was telling us weeks ago, a couple of weeks ago, just how nervous he was for the first time. He went on the radio live yesterday, though. I think that was his second opportunity. Sounded right at home down here in the cellar, the KPCG studio here at Edstone. Well, what he had to say about Jeremy Corbyn, wow. His dangerous views are well known over here in the UK. And I think that's what was striking about that program, is that he makes no apologies for his radical extremist views, saying that America is the moral equivalent of ISIS. I mean, this is the man that heads up the Labour Party now. He makes no bones about his hatred for Israel. He's openly sympathetic to Hamas and Hezbollah. Well, you heard Mr. McDonald go through it on the program yesterday, calling Osama bin Laden's death a tragedy. He's given praise to Russian and Iranian propaganda tools. And it's amazing to me that these kinds of radical views, that they don't hurt an individual's political campaign, they help it. Look at the United States with the rise of Bernie Sanders on the left. Of course, many would sort of just brush him aside as someone that would never be voted into office. But just the fact that he has as much popularity as he does, it has an impact. It has others in his party lurching to the left as well, to gain those votes on the far left. As I say, those radical views in the United States and Britain, they're now seen as a selling point. And as Brad McDonald brought out yesterday, what does it say about Britain that someone with views that extreme, that radical, is now heading up the biggest opposition party in the UK? Here again, I think the point made yesterday about those who dismiss Corbyn as a kook that would never become prime minister, well, people need to open their eyes. I mean, we're not here making any predictions by any means, but we're certainly here to help you follow the trends, to watch your world, to look at where our nations are headed. What does it say about Britain as a nation? You know, there were undoubtedly many, many people, many opponents of those on the far left who years ago thought, well, surely America could never have a leader, a president, whose spiritual advisor was someone who hated America. Surely we'd never have a president who was close friends with unrepentant terrorists or Jew haters or with strong ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. Let me just read to you what the Rolling Stone said about Senator Barack Obama back in 2007. This was just before his campaign got off and running February 22nd, 2007. This is as openly radical a background as any significant American political figure has ever emerged from. How about that? Surely someone like that would never become president of the United States. That magazine article insisted that Jeremiah Wright was not an incidental figure in President Obama's life, or then Senator Obama's life, or in his politics. He was not an incidental figure. He had a powerful impact on President Obama as a young man. The president said as much himself in his own autobiography. Rolling Stone said, when you read his autobiography, the surprising thing for such a measured politician is the depth of radical feeling that seeps through, the amount of Jeremiah Wright that's packed in there. You just read his book. He had radical views that were well known. Same with Jeremy Corbyn, same with Bernie Sanders, same with many others that are gaining popularity in nations where, as Brad McDonald said yesterday, many applaud their efforts or some just kind of tune it out. Okay, so he's extreme. Okay, so he's radical. What's the difference? What's the big deal? Brett Stevens had a piece earlier this week about those here in Britain, those on the right, who see this as a great thing. They see this as a gift to the Conservative Party. Well, there's no way 4 or 5 years from now Jeremy Corbyn could ever be prime minister. No way it could happen. They're cheering this. This is the end of the Labour Party. Stephen says that's one way of looking at it. Another is that the political ascent of a man who admires Venezuela's Hugo Chavez and keeps company with Holocaust deniers is another milepost in Britain's long decline amid a broader unraveling in the West. See, that's big picture for you, big picture perspective. That's what we need when we see these kinds of things happening. It's another milepost in Britain's long decline and the unraveling of the West. Stevens talks about how Mr. Cameron's re-election recently, that he just won a slim majority in Parliament. He grabbed 330 seats out of 650. So it wasn't overwhelming, just a very slim majority. And Stevens said, if you look back at John Major's election in, I think it was 1992, that he only grabbed 336 seats. In other words, Stevens writes, what separates Britain from the sundry furies of nationalism and nutterism are 6 seats in Parliament. 6 seats. That's how the scales can tip in one direction or the other. Of course, we know, like it says in Romans 13, that no one sets foot into an office of power in this world without God making it possible. It could go any direction. We know the major direction that our nations are headed in. We know from the prophecies of God what's happening to our nations. And we don't get involved in politics except to comment on what's happening to our leaders, to the leaders of our nations. The lack of leadership, Isaiah 3, and prophecies like that, we talk about them often. And yet we don't vote, we don't endorse one group or the other group. But what about the views? What about the fact that, as Brad McDonald said, here's a prominent leader who wants to lead Britain but who goes to a ceremony and won't even sing Britain's national anthem. He wants to lead Britain, but he can't sing the national anthem of the very nation he wants to lead. What does that say about where we are? Are we in the latter days? Are these remarkable transformations that are happening right before our eyes? Or is this just something that we can brush aside and dismiss or even applaud? Oh, surely this is his end. This is their end. This could never happen. A lot can happen in the course of 5 years. Stevens brings this out in his article. A recession, scandals, status in the European Union, anything. Anything can happen. But forget about what could happen 5 years from now. Look at where we are right now. Look at what's happening right now. Look at the kinds of views that are right at the top of the Labour Party. What does the Labour Party's lurch to the left? What does it say about the UK? What does it send to Britain's enemies? What message does it send abroad? Stephen says the weakness of the West will be a source of moral comfort and political advantage to its enemies. Not only the Iranians and Chinese and Russians and Sunni fanatics, but also domestic ideological entrepreneurs and charismatics. Internal enemies, in other words. It sends a strong message, this does, to Iran, to China, to Russia, to Sunni fanatics, to enemies of the British state, right here within Britain. What does it say? Jonathan Tobin at Commentary. He said the elevation of a person who holds the views that he has embraced, it sends a chilling message for the future of British Jewry and that of Europe as a whole at a time of increasing anti-Semitism. His radical anti-Jewish views, what kind of message does this send to Britain, to Europe, where there's already a rising tide of anti-Semitism? Just this week, Iceland announced that it was boycotting goods manufactured where? In Syria? Iran? North Korea? Russia? No. In Israel. Iceland is boycotting Israel. That's the state of the world today. It's upside down. Here you have Europe and the West removing sanctions on Iran and slapping sanctions on Israel. I've told you about the petition. More than 100,000 Britons signed on to have Prime Minister Netanyahu arrested when he visited here the other week. And yet, many of these same individuals, no doubt, who signed that petition, support leaders like the ones in the Labour Party that want to, as Brad McDonald said, have tea with the leaders of Hezbollah or Hamas or the mullahs in Iran. Trade with Iran is increasing. Trade with Israel is decreasing. Iran gains legitimacy. Israel loses legitimacy. This is the world today. The Jerusalem Post, by the way, just reported that the Iranian Revolutionary Guard is now refining these drones that have a 3,000-kilometer range, round trip. It quotes the lieutenant commander of the Revolutionary Guard, bragging about this. And of course, whenever they brag about it, they always talk about it in terms of threatening the United States and Israel. This report quotes, I think his name's Salami, Brigadier General Hussein Salami. He says, any U.S. airbase whose airplanes can reach the Iranian airspace, as well as their aircraft carriers, can be targeted by Iran's unique high-precision striking ballistic missiles and drones. That's quoting the lieutenant commander of the Revolutionary Guard, representing the nation that is gaining legitimacy, representing the nation that Europe and the West are lifting sanctions on. This article, the Jerusalem Post, it says, in April, a U.S. Army report said Iran is building a fleet of so-called suicide kamikaze drones and providing know-how on assembling these new weapons to its terrorist allies, Hamas in the Gaza Strip and Hezbollah in Lebanon. These are the groups that Mr. Corbyn loves. They're getting these drones from Iran so that they can use them then to attack Israel. The report, which was cited by the Washington Times and published by the U.S. Army's Foreign Ministry Studies Office at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, states that no aspect of Iran's overt military program has seen as much development over the past decade as Iranian unmanned aerial vehicles, or drones. No aspect of Iran's overt military program has gotten quite this much attention, quite this much improvement, quite this many upgrades. It's an upside-down world. You can appreciate what Jesus said, to watch and to pray always, or Peter, who said, watch unto prayer. Because the world is upside down. Trade with Iran is increasing, while with Israel, it's on the decrease. Israel's losing. It's losing allies. Iran is gaining them. Right here in the West. And our leaders are a perfect reflection of the state of affairs in these Western nations, in the United States and Britain in particular. When we come back, I just want to highlight another article that came out just this week, an important one about the problem with immigration. Immigration in the United States, that is. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
For an easy-to-read, information-rich news brief, join the growing readership of the Trumpet Weekly. Now you can enjoy all the top news stories from the previous week condensed into a report combining the commentary, analysis, and reporting you've come to expect from thetrumpet.com sent directly to your email. Subscribing is completely free. Simply visit the Trumpet Weekly section of thetrumpet.com to subscribe by email today.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program.
So there was a report on Fox News, I believe it was Wednesday, where they've pieced together evidence from local, state, and federal statistics that has revealed, as it says, this report, a wildly disproportionate number of murderers, rapists, and drug dealers who are crossing into the United States amid the wave of immigrants, many no doubt seeking a better life. But mixed in, you have this wildly disproportionate number of murderers, rapists, and drug dealers. And the way that the Fox News article sets this up, it talks about, like, if you go to the federal government websites and gather statistics, it's amazing in most cases how many details there are, as this Fox report brings out. I mean, if you want to know that Native Hawaiian or other Pacific Islanders stole a car, you can find out exactly how many did that. Or how many American Indian or Alaska Natives were arrested. You can find it out. But if you want to find out how many illegal immigrants are in our jails, the federal government, well, those authorities have no idea. They don't keep track of those statistics. This is, again, from the Fox News article. September 16th, the explosive figures show illegal immigrants are three times as likely to be convicted of murder as members of the general population and account for far more crimes than their 3.5% share of the U.S. population would suggest. Now, I think that some would argue that 3.5%, but still, the point stands. I mean, the fact that they're committing this many crimes at an alarming rate, and that it's being concealed. The truth about it, I mean, the statistics. It quotes this one individual from, well, a former Department of Justice attorney, Christian Adams, who says there are a lot of reasons states don't make this information readily available, and there's no clearinghouse of data at high levels. He says these numbers would expose how serious the problem is and make the government look bad. And so they have a reason to conceal it because it would make the government look bad. You hear lots of talk about it, particularly in this election cycle for America. But little is done. Little to nothing has been done. And even when you hear the talk about it, it's usually in terms of comprehensive immigration reform, whatever that means. It sounds nice. It sounds big. But nothing ever gets done. Adams called this illegal immigrant crime a wave of staggering proportions. Now, who can deny that? The Fox piece puts together these stats, drawing on a lot of different stat-keeping organizations down at the local levels and such, because, you, as I say, you can't get it at the government level, the federal level. But this is getting more publicity, as it should, with some of these higher-profile crimes, like with Kate Steinle, that gained national attention. You have the books that have come out addressing it, Ann Coulter's book, Mark Levin's book. You have the success of Donald Trump's campaign, who's at least given some specifics on the subject. Build a wall, deport the illegals. This article, it says a smattering of statistics can be teased out of data made public in other states heavily impacted by illegal immigration, although a full picture or apples-to-apples comparison remains elusive. So it's hard to get the complete picture here. But the bits and pieces that are coming out, very revealing, shocking. This article gives several examples here. Bulleted points, it says in Florida, there were 5,061 illegal immigrant inmates in state prison facilities as of June 30th. That's 5,000 illegal immigrant inmates. In Illinois, 3,755. That's out of 46,000 total. So a much bigger chunk than just 3 or 4%. More like 6 to 8%. Here's another example. State of Arizona. It says neither state public safety officials nor the governor's office could produce figures showing the number of criminal illegal immigrants held in county jails, but state prison figures released by the Arizona Department of Correction show that 42,758 prisoners held in state facilities in July. Of that number, out of 42,758, 10.8% were illegal immigrants. One in 10. More than that, 10.8%. Nearly 11 out of 100 in Arizona's prison system. What about California? The state that used to be the golden state, the breadbasket of America. If America was the breadbasket of the world, California was the breadbasket of the United States. Tremendous wealth and prosperity. Look at the state today. It's falling apart. California has 128,543 inmates as of August 12th. The state, as this article brings out, it's been criticized for its leniency toward illegal immigrants. It's been criticized for not keeping track of the citizenship status of inmates. Fox News says, as of July 31, 2013, the last time figures were documented, they're getting away from this. We don't want to document it. It shows how bad the problem really is, so let's just pretend it doesn't exist. But the last time these figures were documented, there were as many as 18,000 foreign-born citizens of California, state prisons of 133,000 incarcerated. 18,000 out of 133,000. You can do the math to figure out the percentage. It says the Board of State and Community Corrections provided figures to Fox News from 2014 showing that there are 142,000 inmates in 120 county prisons. But while everything from mental health cases to dental and medical appointments are closely tracked, the number of illegal aliens or even non-citizens is not. Don't track that. Don't keep track of that if they came in illegally. Keep a close watch on their dental care. Keep a close watch on mental health cases. What does it say? Not only about the extent of the problem, but what does it say about those in positions of leadership who not only refuse to address the problem, but they refuse to tell the American public about the problem? This Breitbart piece also came out this week. Federal data, U.S. annually admits 250,000 Muslim migrants. These are ones who were admitted in legally by the invitation of the U.S. federal government. The president announced recently that he intends to add another 10,000 Syrian migrants to that figure. In 2013, this piece says, 117,000 migrants from Muslim-majority countries were permanently resettled within the United States, having been given lawful permanent resident status. Additionally, in 2013, the United States voluntarily admitted an extra 122,000 temporary migrants from Muslim countries as foreign students and foreign workers as well, or rather as well as 39,000 refugees and asylees from Muslim countries. Thus, 12 years after the September 11th hijackers were invited into the country on temporary visas, the U.S. decided to admit 280,000 migrants from Muslim countries within a single year. Within a single year. Well, you look at the numbers that are swarming Europe right now. And the numbers from the Middle East, from Muslim nations. And the U.S. is right up there with them, welcoming them in. Does this change the nations at all? That's what Europe is debating right now. Does it change Britain? from the inside out? The Times reported just today about 3,000 terror suspects plotting to attack the UK. Only this article is not talking about those who are seeking to get here from Syria or from Libya or from Iraq. This is talking about those that have been born here in the UK. The police, the MI5, they're monitoring more than 3,000 homegrown Islamist extremists right here in the nation. The article says, although more than half of Islamists on terrorist watch lists live in London, especially in the capitals east and west, there are other hotspots in the southeast, West Midlands and Manchester. And then notice this. Mr. Parker, it's quoting the director of military intelligence, he told BBC Radio 4, most of the people who try to become involved in terrorism in this country are people who were born and brought up here, have come through our education system, and have nonetheless concluded that the country, their home country, and the country of their birth is their enemy. They've been brought up in the system. Now, how does this connect with what we talked about at the start? About the leaders in our nations today and what it means, the signal that it sends, the message it sends. Well, these leaders themselves are products of the educational system here in the West. They've gone to schools in Britain. A few weeks ago, I talked about that case with Timothy Hunt, a professor down at a big university in London. He makes one joke that some took to mean he was criticizing women, and he's gone. He makes a joke abroad, and he's fired before he even gets back home. There's no room for him in the educational system. No tolerance at all for someone that could tell a funny joke or an ill-timed joke or a joke that was misunderstood. Look at the leaders and then look at the education system. Look at, we've been talking here recently quite a lot about Isaiah 59, Isaiah 3, other passages that talk about how man is just utterly incapable of solving the problems of this world. But you look at the problems in our own nations, and I was thinking this morning just about that Lincoln address, the Lyceum address, given when he was just a young man, where he talked about, you know, the only way that we can, he was speaking for America, the only way that we could be destroyed is from within. But in just reviewing some of my old notes about that speech, what a stark contrast to the products of the modern educational system today. Here he was just 28 at the time, as I said. He began this speech by praising God, giving thanks to God for the stupendous blessings that he had bestowed upon this land, the United States of America. And he told his fellow Americans that they owed a debt of gratitude to their ancestors, those patriots of 1776 who sacrificed so much. Lincoln said, let reverence for the laws be breathed by every American mother to the lisping babe that prattles on her lap. Let it be taught in schools and seminaries and in colleges. Let it be written in primers, selling books, and in almanacs. Let it be preached from the pulpit, proclaimed in legislative halls, and enforced in courts of justice. And in short, let it become the political religion of the nation. And let the old and the young, the rich and the poor, the grave and the gay, all of all sexes and tongues and colors and conditions, sacrifice unceasingly upon its altars. We have to be a nation that reveres law and order. A nation that honors and respects God. A nation that's thankful for its God-given blessings. Lincoln said, hey, look to the founders. Look to their example. Those who pledged their lives, their fortunes, their sacred honor to uphold and defend the rule of law, to fight for the nation. Look at our nations today. Look at what our educational institutions, our very modern educational institutions, look at what they have produced. Look at the students being graduated, who graduate on to positions of leadership in society. Lincoln warned, if destruction be our lot, we must ourselves be its author and finisher. In other words, if we end in ruin, we have ourselves to blame. Lincoln said, as a nation of freemen, we must live through all time or die by suicide. That, in many ways, is what we're seeing happen. Of course, there are dangers abroad as well, and the Bible speaks of these. But there's also a great sickness within, and the Bible speaks of this as well. Isaiah 1 says, the whole head is sick, from the head to the toe. The whole body is sick. When we come back, we'll look at a few scriptures where God talks about blessings and remembering our history and remembering those who went before us, just as Lincoln encouraged people to do. Americans to do with respect to the founders. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream is available at kpcg.fm. Send us your feedback and comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
To the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
Just look at the monumental challenges facing Britain and the United States. And what a time to drift so far from God. In Deuteronomy 8, God warned Israel anciently to remember. To remember the blessings, to remember who provided those blessings. This passage, among others, it serves as a great warning to the latter-day descendants of Israel today. Those descendants who reside in Britain, in the United States, and elsewhere. Let me read Deuteronomy 8, verse 11. It says, "Beware that you forget not the Lord your God in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes, which I command you this day." We didn't read the first couple of verses where God says to remember and to humble yourself. Continuing in verse 12, it says, "Lest when you have eaten and are full and have built goodly houses and dwelt therein, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and your gold is multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, then," verse 14, "then your heart be lifted up, and you forget the Lord your God, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage." Don't forget. Don't forget God and his blessings. Don't forget God and his laws. Don't get spoiled. Don't be lifted up with pride and vanity. Don't forget about your humble beginnings. Let's notice Isaiah chapter 2. Isaiah 2, when God was preparing Isaiah, the prophet, for his calling, he told him that the heart of the Israelites would be hard, that their ears would be heavy, that their eyes would be closed. This has been the tendency. We're facing so many similar challenges today as they did anciently. And most people have ears that are dull of hearing and eyes that are shut tight. They don't want to see. They don't want to know. They don't care. Verse 17 of Isaiah 2, "And the loftiness of man shall be bowed down, and the haughtiness of men shall be made low, and the Lord alone shall be exalted in that day." Back up to verse 11, "The lofty looks of man shall be humbled, and the haughtiness of men," well, it says much the same. Verse 18, it says, "And the idols he shall utterly abolish, and they shall go into holes of the rocks and in the caves of the earth." Well, just skip down to verse 21. This is the point I want to get to. Verse 22, sorry, it says, "Cease you from man, whose breath is in his nostrils, for wherein is he to be accounted of?" We've talked a lot, usually, in going through Jeremiah 17 or Isaiah 59, but here in Isaiah 2, you see a similar message. We see here the source of all of our problems. It's us. It's man's heart. "Cease you from man." Jeremiah 17:5 says, "Cursed be the man that trusts in man." It's a curse to place our faith, our trust in human nature. Psalm 146:3, "Put not your trust in princes." This is a lesson that man hasn't learned. And it's put us in the dangerous position that we're in. With all these mounting problems, and us putting our faith and our trust in men rather than God. Isaiah chapter 1. This I referred to earlier about the sickness from within. That's talked about in the first few verses. But look down at verse 16. Isaiah says, "Wash you, make you clean, put away the evil of your doings from before my eyes, cease to do evil." This is where it starts, always. This is where things are made better. This is how you begin the process, and it can be a long and difficult one to come out of. But it always begins with putting away evil, with being washed and made clean. Before we can really and truly serve God, before we can worship God, we've got to be washed and purified. It says, learn to do well, seek judgment, relieve the oppressed, judge the fatherless, and plead for the widow. This is what serving God is all about. We have to be educated, of course, in God's ways, His laws. We have to come to really know Him, to be able to help Him and serve Him in this way. But that is possible. Verse 18 says, "Come now and let us reason together, says the Lord." That's what God wants. He wants to talk with us. He wants to educate us. He wants to lead us. "Come now and let us reason together, says the Lord. Though your sins be as scarlet, they shall be as white as snow. Though they be red like crimson, they shall be as wool." Come and reason together with God. That's what education, that's what government, that's what industry needs, to reason with God. This is what's missing from modern education today. This is why the world is the way it is. There is a solution, though. Brad McDonald talked about this toward the end of his program yesterday. All these events that we're seeing, they're discussed in great detail in Bible prophecy. Events surrounding the return of Jesus Christ to this earth and the establishment of God's kingdom, God's family on this earth. Prophecy after prophecy after prophecy. That's what I talked about on one of the programs that we recorded yesterday for TV. From Genesis 3 right through, Moses wrote about it, David in the Psalms, the major prophets, the minor prophets. Jesus came along in the New Testament, talked about his second coming, talked about if I go, I'm coming again, talked about in Matthew 24 all the events that would unfold right before his return. That's what we're seeing. We're seeing it unfold. That's why we have to keep our eyes open. We don't want our eyes to get heavy. We don't want our ears to stop listening, to stop hearing. We've got to, as Jesus said, watch and pray. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as we wrap up another week on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial. Its headquarters campus or facilities in Edmond, Oklahoma, in the U.S. The live stream is available all around the world on kpcg.fm. Remember to send us your feedback, td@kpcg.fm, if you'd like to comment or request anything. Later today, don't forget about the Trumpet Hour with Joel Hilliker and the Trumpet.com panelists. We'll look forward to that at 4 p.m. Oklahoma time, Friday afternoon. Keep watching, keep praying, as Christ said, so that you may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass and stand before the Son of Man. See you next week.